Grateful to have the opportunity to preach today and fill in for Wes. I think Wes and Holly are flying to Montana today, so they're going to have a week together to enjoy that, and as well as the entire month that Wes has been allowed to have off. And I'm grateful to be able to be scheduled to preach today. About a month ago, I had foot surgery, and I was thinking, I hope I'm well enough to do that. I've used a cane some, and but I've got some tennis shoes. I've never preached in tennis shoes, I don't think, in the United States in my lifetime. But I tell you, they're feeling pretty good. And I've been missing something my whole life, I think. But it's good to have this chance to be here. Let me tell you, you're in a good place this morning. Whatever decision took place to be here, I think you're certainly fulfilling purposes in your life for God to make a decision to be at church. Some of you are here all the time. Some just periodically, and some maybe not so often. And we met some first-time guests this morning. I read this week from Dr. Ryan Burge that now, as a research last year, 41% of Americans only attend a place of worship once or less a year. 41%. And of course, less than once a year means, of course, not at all. So thank you for the decision you've made to be at McDermott Road this morning and take part in helping a little bit of holiness come about. I'm not sure, am I getting an echo? Maybe it's just me. But anyway, of course, we're concluding 6 weeks of sermons based on Leviticus, and it's been a very interesting series for us. I think you would agree. It's the first time I think I remember a church having a series like that, and the title is this: Holiness and Homework, Where Religion Meets Reality. And of course, even Leviticus itself is very aptly named, is it not? It's a book that starts out from the very first verse as if it's written to the priests who are going to now control every walk of life that a Jew is about to have in regards to their relationship with God. It's instructions to those priests from the tribe of Levi, hence the name Leviticus. And so it's directing a nation, as we said, in a devotion and their actions toward God. It's really not a book written to us. It's not written to Christians. It's written to priests, and they're the ones charged, as we said, with God's instructions. So their job was to do that, and it was their instruction book in regard to, as we've learned already, a sacrifice, feast days, the Sabbath, hygiene, your relationship with others, and so forth. And it's really rare in world history. I'm carrying my notes. I can't stand in one spot. If I move, it's because, anyway, I'm still having a little trouble with the foot, so I got my iPad with me here in my hand. So rare in world history does a country be ruled by their laws of their God. And in other words, everything right or wrong in their society was God-based, and their, as we said, holidays, feast days, etc., they were not so much as obeying them because they were citizens of Israel, but because they were following the laws of Jehovah God. And it's why these books traditionally attributed to Moses, all written when? Before entering the promised land, before they're about to set up their society and settle into their country. It was the basis for what Joshua was charged to do when he got there, which is get everything out of that land that is not Jewish, including the people that are there, certainly including the idols that are there. So let's get rid of all that culture because we're bringing an entire different society in, and that's what the books of law are about. They were not supposed to be living next door to anyone who was not Jewish. And so in looking for one verse, it might be a theme for the book. There are several, but I've chosen Leviticus chapter 20 and verse 7, and it uses this phrase, consecrate. Consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, as we've seen throughout, for I am the Lord your God. Okay, so there's that word, consecrate. That's not a word used often in our vocabulary, is it? It's not something we use in our home. We don't, when you tell your children, drop them off at school, you know, consecrate yourself today, honey, and have a good day. It's not something we're familiar with. It obviously means, as in the context, you're doing something to yourself, or you're not. And so it's making yourself into something. It's declaring, in a sense, yourself to be something. So it's an internal change that hopefully is taking place. And simply, in this case, it means I am going to consecrate myself to be holy, whatever that might mean. That's the change I'm going to make to myself. So God is saying there are things I want you to do that will help you to be holy. And several times in Leviticus, he's saying, be holy like me. Now, he doesn't mean by that I'm taking on God's divine nature, or I'm becoming equal with God in any sense, but I'm making myself how? I'm making myself like God in spirit, like God in what I am going to start to focus on. I'm going to make God-like things my priorities, and I'm going to be like God in loving what is holy. So that's the consecration that Leviticus is all about, is trying to get people to do that. And so in 2025, you know, we're asking, how can any of these things in Leviticus make me have any more sense of holiness? These old laws and practices and things they put into place in their daily life make a real application to me, because if we date them with Moses, we're dating about 1400 B.C., and even thinking of that, you know, over 3,000 years ago, almost 4,000, can this kind of book help me be holy? But here's the thing. I actually believe that a Jew would have almost been asking themselves the same question for really the next 1,500 years. And because remember, when Leviticus was written, it wasn't as though copies were passed out to every household, or you know, you had it in an attachment in an email or something you might read on a web page. The families didn't have any copies, and you know what? If they did, it still wouldn't make any difference because they couldn't read. They couldn't read it. And even in the first century, it was thought that Jewish society was about 3% literate. So we're talking about a society that's not learning by anything that's written. They're only learning by oral communication. So even a Jew, how did a Jew make application? How did they relate to Leviticus when it's such a society of oral communication, oral tradition? They simply learned by what was said, what was passed to the priest, if there was a copy or some copies of this, or however Moses was able to pass it on, and they in turn passed it to their families. It was simply daily communication with each other about these type of things. That's how they learned. They didn't have the TV to wake up to or the internet. Nothing was printed to read. And that's why Deuteronomy chapter 6, to me, resonates so much more when I realize the kind of society that it was. This passage is Deuteronomy 6, beginning in verse 6. It says there, and these words that I command you today shall be on your heart. Now, the easy-to-read version I really like says, always remember these commands that I give you today. Now, if I was doing that with a group of people, it would be, okay, always remember these commands that I'm giving you today. Here's your copy, right? Well, like I was saying, that didn't happen. So how are they going to remember these commands? Well, that's what verse 7 is all about. That's why it's so important. Be sure to teach them diligently to your children. And you shall talk of them when you sit in your house, and when you walk by the way, and when you lie down, and when you rise. Teach them to your children how? When you're talking, when you're sitting, when you're walking, when you're lying down, and when you're getting up. If you shorten that verse, here's how I would have it. Talk to your children all the time about the law of God, right? That's what the verse is trying to say. That, again, that's the only way to learn. That's the only way to communicate then. Talk to your children all the time about how to be holy. So do you think you could survive asking this question? How would you survive in a society that was strictly an oral society? There's nothing for you to read. There's nothing for you to watch. There's a picture here, I think, of the kind of society we're used to living in. Okay. There's how we learn, right? It's set up to 10 hours a day. We're in front of a screen. I appreciate Mikey getting this slide. I actually said, Mikey, find a family at a restaurant, because that's what I see, right? A family of four with the two kids and the two parents, and they're not talking. Well, Mikey did even better. She went to the home. And I wonder sometimes, that's what's going on in our house. You know, if we had to communicate strictly by speaking, that's the only way. I don't know. How would we do that? Maybe, you know, I was talking today, this morning, about someone saying, can I call you or text you? You know, it's almost rude to call anymore, right? Because, you know, I'm interrupting, that's oral communication. Is that going to be too much? instead of a text. But holiness and what? Holiness and homework, where religion meets reality. And the point of that is just what we saw. It's happening in the home. That's what was happening in the Jewish society, for these people to learn this holiness. And I wonder sometimes, based on even the picture we just saw, it would be more accurate to say holiness and homework, where religion never meets reality. That's just not something we get around to talking about at home, or the laws of God or the expectations of God. So text today from Leviticus, as was read for us, was from chapter 19. Now, the uniqueness of this chapter compared to Leviticus is that, you remember, the rest of Leviticus is all about outward things that people would do. The washings, the sacrifices, the feast, and so forth. Leviticus 19 transitions to the way that you also consecrate your thoughts and your inward self. And so among that list that we read in chapter 19 is don't steal, don't lie, don't slander people, don't hate. And then this proactive command to love your neighbor as yourself. And so how did a Jewish family at the same time accomplish these things? How did they learn these type of things? Was it just simply by saying, well, this is what we're being asked to do? Or how did they put them into practice? And maybe we'd ask all this in the context in a different way. Why would a Jewish family try to be holy? What's the purpose of it all? And if you said, well, they just want to obey God. God said so. And that would be correct. I mean, that's obeying God, and that's a good thing. But let me illustrate it like this. Because today, there's something 100% of us have in common. Everybody in here has at least one thing in common, all of us without exception. Every one of us today here had or still has a father. All of us. And some of us have good stories of our father, and some of us don't. Some of us perhaps may not have even known our father. But if I ask you this morning, tell me about your father, how many of you would tell me about your father by describing him, what he taught you, by describing him, what he expected of you? Well, here's what my father thought was important, or here's what he wanted me to be like, or here's what he wanted me to become. In other words, we would couch our conversation about our father in what he was trying to spur us to do. So when I read Leviticus, and church, when you read Leviticus and Numbers and Deuteronomy, books, as I said, not written to us, perhaps I could read it differently if I read it as though, well, this must be what my father is like. This is what my heavenly father is like. Or in other words, this is what is important to my father. This is what my father expects from me. And so it's not just what a Jewish father must have done necessarily, but it's what he would put into practice and what he would begin to talk about. And that's why Deuteronomy 6, again, to me, is in that talk to you about all the time about my commandments conversations, would they not have tried to say, this is what our Father is like. That's why we want to obey these commands, so we can be holy like Him. And I think it would help their children, of course, and then naturally it would help the family, naturally it would help the tribe, but the goal of it all is to help the entire nation. Remember, God is trying to establish a complete holy nation. He has to start from the bottom up, and He starts with the individual household in making this nation holy, because these commands in Leviticus 19, I like them because they are not only changing habits or daily activities, they're changing how we also react to people, how we respond to people. So you consecrate yourself, you become holy in all you do, and how do you teach a child to do that? Again, that's the point we're bringing out. I like this passage in Proverbs 23 and verse 24. It says, and this is the easy to read version again, the father of a good person is very happy. Basically saying the father of good boys and girls, the father of good sons and daughters is a happy man. A wise child brings him joy. A wise son or daughter brings a father joy. So since it's Father's Day, let me just in the last couple of minutes here talk to dads a little bit about this, because that's what's going on here in Leviticus, the heads of the household. And let me simply ask, are you helping getting holiness into your home? Are you helping getting holiness into your house? These books of the law are what our Heavenly Father is like. He's saying, here is who I am. Here is what I want you to be. And that's the question, I think, for us today. I hope you're doing the same thing in your home, in the sense that children are learning from you. And it's been said, and I agree, that a child learns from his father every day. A child learns from his father every day. And it may be good, or it may be bad. But trust me, they're definitely learning from you, because you're saying, kids, here's who I am. Here's who I am, and here's what I'm hoping you may become. And so what are some of the things they're learning from our fathers? Well, today I'll just maybe touch on one subject. Learning how you respond to life. Because putting that again into the context of Leviticus 19, when you think about what's about to happen, an entire nation is getting ready to move to a new land. Every family is going to move. Moving in itself can be a trial enough, right? And they're sojourners, they're walking, they're carrying whatever they have. They're also being asked to take on these new religious laws. Most of the fathers are going to be asked to be warriors. They're going to be asked to be soldiers. Again, they're going to have to deal with this culture that's about to come face them and so forth. So they're watching. You imagine all the children that are watching how their parents respond to this upheaval of life, to this challenge that's getting ready to come into their home. So they're, in the same way, I think that's with us today. Our children are watching how we respond to the good things in life, and they're watching how you respond to the bad things in life. And the way you do it has a profound impact on how they are going to view life, both the good and the bad. So are they seeing patience? Are they seeing perseverance? Are they seeing adaptability? Are they seeing obstacles in your life as part of the journey, or more like the end of the road? I've heard it said that the God of the mountaintop, don't forget, is also the God of the valley. I got to open up Father's Day gift this morning. That my son had sent. Laura gave it to me, and it was a T-shirt for my son. The T-shirt said, "Be patient with me. I'm from the 1900s." And so He's gotten me a lot of gifts. My daughter's probably got something for me later today. And I appreciate that. But you know what the greatest gift my kids can give me? Is when they call me or ask me for my advice. When they call me or say, "Dad, I'm dealing with something. Can you help me? I'm trying to work through a problem." Why would children ask that of their father? Maybe it's because they think the father can help. Maybe it's because they have seen something from that father that would say, "I've got some respect for how that father has dealt with me or with other situations." And so what a blessing that is when that happens. And that's exactly what's happening here with about what the Israelites were going to do. They're going to try to attempt to conquer a completely new land that required their complete trust and obedience to God. And God is saying, "Well, here's the way I'm going to help you. These actions, these habits, these traditions that you take on, these commands, that's what's going to help you face these trials." I saw in a recent article this quote here. It just said it's an ancient Greek truism. It says, "Facing trials, you are not going to grow up to your expectations. You're going to fall down to the level of your readiness and preparation." Now, do you understand what that's saying? That's saying, basically, we're going to respond to situations on what we have learned to that point. We may have hopes that we'll do better, or we may have aspirations. Maybe if that happens to my son or daughter, they'll do this or that. Well, it's probably going to be based on whatever level I have helped them get to instead of my expectations. And as I look at some of the examples in the rest of the Old Testament of Jewish people responding or being strong in the face of trials and temptations with young people, for instance, I think of young Joseph fleeing from Potiphar's wife, right? For some reason, he said, "I cannot participate in that. I've got to run from this situation." Daniel, young Daniel, of course, continued to pray to God when commanded not to. Young Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did not bow down and worship the image of gold. Now, what was in those young men to keep them from participating in those acts of rebellion or sin? And where did they learn the courage to face that temptation and adversity? Why were they so dedicated to God and their religion? Well, I believe it was because it had been ingrained in them at an early age to be holy, to be consecrated to God. Let me show you a picture of an item here. Some of you may know what this is. Okay. And now let's put the second picture up there. Okay. So that is what's called a breakaway coupling. Okay? I worked for Avis Rent-A-Car back in the 1900s. And my co-worker, what we were tasked to do was clean the cars and pump the gas all at the same time, get them back to the lot where they could be rented out. And twice my co-worker drove out of the garage with the gas pump still in the car. And each time he either ripped the pump from the gas, he ripped the hose from the gas pump, or he ripped the handle off the hose and gas went everywhere and maybe damaged the car. And both times he was charged to, you know, pay the repairs for that. Well, about 10 years ago, 10 or 12 years ago, someone invented this breakaway coupling. And it's at the top of every gas hose. And now when you drive off like that, it'll break away. And nothing is really harmed. Sometimes there's a little damage. But you can imagine going into Buc-ee's like people do. You know, and they fill up with gas and they go in and fill up themselves and they come back to the car and drive away, and that happens. And you might say, "Well, Mark, how do you know about those?" And let's just say I've seen it work, okay? But that did not come about by accident, okay? That was not accidental that those are on those pump. It was intentional. Someone said, there's a problem that can happen, and this is a way to fix that. Daniel Horta, Seven Traits of Effective Parenting, says intentionality is simply a matter of knowing what you want to do to make each day count in your child's life. I think we have that quote. I think that's a slide. Okay, thank you. Intentionality is simply a matter of knowing what you want to do to make each day count in your child's life. Now, you may say, oh, that sounds easy, right? That's what we do at our house. But here's the thing. The problem is the schedule sometimes we place on ourselves kills intentionality. We're too tired to be intentional today. I'm good about being intentional about what's going to happen tomorrow, next week, next month. I'm great about planning. In fact, that's all really we talk about at the house sometimes is what we're doing tomorrow, and today gets lost. And so any intentionality I have, let's say in regard to a holy conversation, it's just we can't work that in today because we're talking about what's going to happen tomorrow and the days to come. Because this Deuteronomy 6 conversation again, when you walk together, you see, those things that Deuteronomy 6 and verse 7 were talking about were settings where that's all you could really do. When you're walking together, you're talking. I'd almost ask parents, when was the last time you ever asked your son or daughter, let's go for a walk? Has that happened lately? And what would your child say if you say, hey, let's go for a walk? Would they give you like, you know, like, what are you mean outside? Or you mean, do people do that? And are we allowed to do that in our neighborhood? Or, you know, we're great at walking the dog. How good are we at walking the children? You know, it's just a habit that somehow, you know, maybe went away. But that's what Deuteronomy 6 is talking about. You see, a man who leads out of holiness, or a man who leads like Christ, let's bring it to the New Testament, a man who leads like Jesus Christ, or because of his relationship with Christ, is meeting the needs of his wife, and certainly the needs of his children. And simply, a Christian man provides for those under his care, not just physically. Most men relish that part. In other words, I'm going to be the breadwinner. You know, I'll take care of the family that way. We may be good in helping our children emotionally. As a Christian, my concern is about helping my children spiritually. If I leave that element off, I've lost the major part of my influence as a Christian man. And maybe say it this way, with this quote, are my children more like Christ because of my influence in my relationship with them? Or are they more like Christ in spite of me? You see, I believe there's no such thing as spiritual neutrality with fathers, as I was saying earlier. Your words, your thoughts, your actions, and your inactions have consequences every day, good or bad. So simply this morning, in a sense, where is your spiritual life going? Another quote says, you cannot give your children what you do not have. You cannot lead them where you are not going. So maybe the first improvement, you know, needs to happen with ourselves inwardly. You see, the Israelite family, God knew, had an enemy. That enemy was going to be the culture that they were getting ready to move into. That enemy was all that Satan was going to devise to pull any family, any group of people away from God, the temptation to sin and take part in what is there. And it's interesting, in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 16, Paul, of course, being a Jew, he calls the church, he calls it the Israel of God. And there's only one reason to use the parallel. Israel was God's people. Israel was the group of people God was trying to make holy. Now, today, the Israel of God is the church. It's the people that God, again, are trying to raise up to be holy. Remember, the theme for this year has been called Sanctified, Purified for a Purpose. And in 2025, the Israel of God has an enemy as well. And your children are in the same battle. And it's our culture. It's our temptation to sin. It's to leave the Israel of God. It's to assimilate into the society. Or, as Jesus, we know we can't escape the world. But Satan is real, and he wants our kids. And he really wants to destroy the church, just like he wanted to destroy Israel. And so someone has to rise up and be the protector, right? Be the guardian. Be the example. Be the teacher we've talked about today. The one who talks all the time about God. Is that how you could be described today? It's interesting, lately with some movies and books, fictionalized history story of Sparta and Persia. The Spartans that were there to defend their city against the Persian army, and that about 450 BC, that's what was going on. Persia was the world kingdom, and they would go to a city and they'd say, you know, if you let us in, you know, we won't destroy your city, we won't kill everyone, and just begin to kind of assimilate into the laws that we want to bring. And of course, Sparta stood against that, and there was a king, Leonidas. And there's a historical fiction book by Stephen Pressfield called Gates of Fire. And he creates some language for King Leonidas. And a little section is on how he tells the city and tells the Spartans that, you know, we can build a wall. But he says these words. He says, "For a wall of stone will not preserve us, but a wall of men." And brothers, fathers, mothers, there's a great battle taking place with us. A great battle taking place for the souls of our children. And I'd simply say this morning, you are the wall. You are the wall. McDermott children 18 and under make up 26% of our present congregation, but they are what? They are 100% of our future. And so God has aspired for us to have holiness in our families even from the very beginning, and He still wants holiness in the church today. So we pray your home is a good place. We're at a good, as I said, a good place today where we can speak and build each other up. But God's plan is when you go to your home, whatever makeup of your family unit at your home, the same thing is taking place, that it is a stronghold for God because of the holiness and conversations that takes place there. So we've got an invitation song we're going to sing. And Aaron's going to lead us in that. It could be today there's someone who needs to respond and wants to consecrate themselves to God and give themselves to His commands and be baptized today for the remission of their sins. We always rejoice in those opportunities. Perhaps prayer on your part. We'd love to pray for you this morning if that's of need. Even in the prayer room, there's an option there. Might be a better suited for whatever you have to for us this morning, but this song is to encourage you. Let's stand together and sing.